Hello, everyone. Welcome to an episode of Med Student Voices here at the UNC School of Medicine. My name is Grayson Prevett.
And my name is Peter Said.
My name is Risk Algarazi.
And last but not least, my name is Anamika Singh. The four of us have the great pleasure of being a part of the Using the COVID Pandemic to Understand Structural Drivers of Health Disparities course here at UNC. This course was launched in fall of 2021, and while it's only been a year since then, a lot has happened and so much more has changed since COVID-19 first began shaking up our world back in 2020, which is why today, in a time where we have found ourselves closer to reclaiming normal, really a new normal, we want to step back and take an honest look at our community response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Specifically, we want to appraise our community's resilience and how we can build on our collective experience to better prepare and respond to future public health emergencies.
But before we get into our discussion, we'd like to briefly define a couple of key terms from our course that are relevant to this episode. First, resilience. In the social and behavioral sciences, resilience is the adaptation of an individual group to overcome mental, emotional, or behavioral experiences, particularly the ability to maintain health through a pandemic in this situation. And second, health equity. This is achieved when every person has opportunity to be as healthy as possible. In other words, health equity is the ultimate goal and can only result when health inequities, barriers to health, are removed. For example, cost, physical barriers, transportation, political or social position, or social determinant circumstances.
We are delighted and honored to introduce someone who has spent a career focused on reducing health inequity with a unique perspective to share as a leader of the national public health response to the COVID-19 pandemic. She also happens to be one of our newest Tar Heels, Dr. Nancy Messonnier. Welcome.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you all.
Well, it's wonderful having you here today. Dr. Messonnier was recently named the new Dean of the Gillings School of Global Public Health and has been a highly influential public leader, as we'd mentioned, for over 25 years, both in the U.S. and abroad. So first of all, we're thrilled to welcome you here to the Tar Heel Carolina community. But before we talk about your envisioned impact here at UNC, we'd like to hear a little bit more about your unique background with CDC. You held a number of positions throughout your time, including serving as an Epidemic Intelligence Service Officer, Acting Director for the Center of Preparedness and Response, and Director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Can you talk a little bit about your experiences in these roles and how they may have highlighted the importance of health equity and community resilience?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. You know, I was fortunate to have a long and diverse career at CDC. And I think as you think about public health, you can't help but start with the question of health equity. If public health is about the health of an entire population, that means every individual in that population needs to have access to good health. And it is inevitable and appropriate that you think about health equity. I can say in my career, health equity has been part of everything from my first experience as an Epidemic Intelligence Service Officer, where I was investigating my very first outbreak in rural Texas, to my last time at CDC and my role in the COVID response. I think similarly, when I think about public health, one of the most important aspects is the way in which we think about the application of science to populations. In order to have impact, you have to have a great scientific intervention, but it is not effective if it is not implementable in a population. And when you think about implementing an intervention in a population, you really have to understand that population. You need to understand the community. You need to understand their values. You need to understand their operations. And you need to understand how the community connects itself. And that is really, I think, an essential part of understanding community resilience.
And now, to bring in the local perspective and hear more about what is being done in North Carolina, we have Ms. Deborah Farrington, who is the Chief Health Equity Officer for the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. And here was Ms. Farrington's thoughts on this question.
I am the middle of five children, and so fairness is something that's extremely important to me. And I think I learned the principles of fairness very early in my life. And that aligns really well with my values and my background in social work. As a social worker, I'm focused on addressing the concerns of others and promoting social justice and helping meet the needs of individuals who are vulnerable, marginalized, oppressed, or living in poverty. In my role as Chief Health Equity Officer, I have both visibility and the ability to impact change at the individual level, but also at the system level. In this role, I'm able to be an advocate and a leader in policy changes that amplifies the voices of people who are experiencing marginalization. We have a team of folks who are focusing on access to broadband infrastructure and digital equity. We're working on increasing access to prenatal care with rural providers. We've been involved in some community health grants, the community organization. And one of the things that's important to me as a social worker is improving language access and making sure that the materials we have available to our communities are in languages that people need them to be in. increasing access to information in Spanish has been an important priority for us.
Going back to the late 1990s for a second, you played an instrumental role in helping to manage epidemic meningitis in Africa through your work with vaccine development and implementation across several countries. What parallels can you draw between your work with vaccine development and implementation during the COVID-19 pandemic and this past experience? And what were important factors that made the COVID-19 pandemic different and perhaps more difficult?
Yeah, that's actually a great question, and great that you sort of made that connection, because frankly, as I thought about the COVID pandemic, I couldn't help but reflect on the meningitis epidemics in Africa. So in the 1990s, my first trip overseas was to investigate outbreaks of meningococcal meningitis in West Africa. This region of West Africa was very specifically impacted by meningitis every year with peaks of disease. But on top of that, every 10 to 12 years, there were these major epidemics. And this had been going on for more than 100 years. 1996, there were 350,000 cases of meningitis in 4 months in maybe 4 or 5 countries in West Africa, 35,000 deaths. But it was before social media, way before podcasts, and it happened silently and invisibly to most people in the Western world. It looks exactly like you imagined, people lying in tents or on the ground outside of health clinics because there wasn't any space for them, and dying because they didn't have access to simple antibiotics. The technology to make a vaccine to improve the situation existed, but the problem was that the strains that were causing disease in West Africa were different than the strains causing disease in industrialized countries, and pharmaceutical companies were focused on the industrialized country market and on a price point for the vaccine that was well above what was affordable by those countries. And as I tell the story, I hope you will see the parallels to the pandemic that we are having with COVID, the importance of surveillance and response, the importance of laboratory capacity, and the importance of the biomedical enterprise, but also, unfortunately, some of the same things that we continue to wrestle with about inequities in access to care globally. In that situation, at the early days of the Gates Foundation, I was fortunate to be part of a small team that went to the Gates Foundation and pled our case and received funding to actually develop a meningococcal vaccine that was targeted to those strains, an orphan vaccine that took multiple years, but really, I guess in the end, within 10 years, that vaccine was developed at 40 cents a dose and rolled out to people standing in line to get access to it. It was, for me, an incredibly important part of my development as a public health professional and a mark to me of what's possible with the small group of people who are really dedicated and passionate. I think it troubles me that we see those same themes of problems emerging with COVID-19 because it signals that while it's much more visible now, it means we haven't dealt with the root problems. And I worry as this pandemic starts to become part of our normal, some of those conversations have quickly passed over us. And if we miss this opportunity again, we're going to have another epidemic, another pandemic, another problem in some number of years, probably, frankly, not within my career, but I think within yours. And we're going to regret that we haven't found better ways to approach this.
On the note of meningitis outbreaks, you're credited with playing a pivotal role in the successful private-public partnership that helped prevent future outbreaks in Africa or epidemics in Africa through development of low-cost vaccines, like you mentioned, for meningitis. Most recently, you came to UNC after several years at the Skoll Foundation, focusing on reducing global poverty and public health challenges. Do you feel that the background in both the public and private sectors has given a different perspective as a healthcare professional and individual?
Yeah, absolutely. In my role at CDC, I worked closely with pharmaceutical company staff on multiple issues around vaccines. I found those scientists to have the same desire to fix the world, to prevent disease as I had. They have a different structure and decision-making, and being aware of what motivates their companies are important, but they can be incredibly strong partners. I think broadly, one of the problems that you have if you stay in the same sector or institution for a long period of time is that it's hard not to get tunnel vision. attention and not really understand the other sectors that are part of the public health enterprise. For me, it's been an incredible learning experience after being at CDC for so long to go work at the Skoll Foundation for a year and really get a very different perspective from a private foundation about health and how to approach public health and pandemic preparedness. And similarly, although I've only been here for 6 weeks, I feel the same thing. I feel like it really gives me a different perspective that I bring to my work as a dean, and that it would behoove all of us to actually have different perspectives we go about our work, because I really think we miss opportunities if we don't understand what other parts of our enterprise can bring to the table. Public sector work, public health is a team sport. And I think we're stronger with lots of different voices, with people with really different backgrounds and perspectives coming together around the table.
Turning to one of the main topics of our discussion, can you comment on the resiliency of our community during this pandemic and the impact of these resiliency efforts today?
I think as a country, we have shown both our best and our worst selves during this pandemic. I wasn't here during most of the highest points of the pandemic. I was still in Atlanta, but my community rallied around me. And I saw that all over the place in so many different communities, where community members embraced their healthcare providers, embraced the people that had to go to work, helped each other out, brought senior citizens food so they didn't have to go out into the world. And I think those examples of community are at the heart of what makes us special. I do think also at the same time, there have been points in this pandemic where people have not been community-minded. And I think it's really to our deficit to not understand that we live in a place where it matters what the people around us do, and the values that we hold are similar to others in our community and in our country. And that finding those commonalities, feeling like we're all moving together towards a common goal, is incredibly important, both to end the pandemic, but frankly, also to the future of our country.
Yeah, I mean, thank you so much. That was very well said.
There was a recent New York Times opinion article from Dr. Craig Spencer, who was one of the Ebola survivors who came, was treating patients in West Africa, came to New York, was treated at Bellevue, I believe. And now he's a professor and emergency medicine physician at Brown University. He describes the current state of preparedness as wholly inadequate for the next global pandemic, really highlighting the need for strengthening global surveillance capabilities, larger public health workforce, and apropos to our conversation today, equitable access to treatments and vaccines. What are your thoughts on this view in terms of our kind of inability to prepare right now and, you know, the bad position that we're in right now? And what are the needs in terms of improving our current state to ensure there's kind of a consciousness for health equity baked into our future responses?
Yeah, so I would agree with him. And I think you can hear the same theme echoed by lots of people who have been in public health. We see in this space of outbreak response epidemics, a cycle of panic and neglect that is just repeated over and over again. And so, you know, in 2001, one of the first things I did at CDC in emergency response was work on the 2001 anthrax attacks. There was tremendous panic and desire to fix public health. And then people's attention swiftly went elsewhere. And I've seen that happen again and again with Ebola and Zika, H1N1. And even given the unprecedented size and scope of the COVID-19 pandemic, the same thing is happening again. I think that there are a couple messages I would say. One is that in the midst of all the rest of this stuff, people matter. And having the right people in the right place at the right time is part of how we respond appropriately in the minute. So investments in public health and in healthcare and in communities to build community resilience in the time between outbreaks and pandemics and epidemics plays huge dividends during that. And I worry, as I presume that editorial said, that that we forget that too quickly and move on to other emergencies. I would also say that we should have fully anticipated some of the health inequities that became central themes during the COVID pandemic. Those were not new problems. Those are not new problems. And we had every reason to recognize them in advance and to try to preemptively do things to address them. And I'm saddened that we didn't. But even if we had tried to really approach them in the setting of a pandemic, you can't fix those problems overnight. They're systemic issues in our society and our population. solutions. We need to be working on them every day. And frankly, it's the future that we're going to leave to you all to try to think through how to make those long-term investments to build more resiliency in our communities, to build access to care, and to build systems that are more resilient so that they don't fall apart in the middle of another emergency.
And adding on to that, one thing that we extensively revisit in our class is the fact that the pandemic unmasked and exacerbated a number of pre-existing cracks in the United States systems, social, healthcare, and economics. This exacerbation deepened health disparities to an extent that made this truth undeniable. For example, we saw a significant difference in health outcomes between the general population and vulnerable populations. What is being done now to better support these vulnerable communities?
I would start by saying that not enough is being done and not enough has been done, and I worry that not enough will be done. I do want to call out success because I do think that there has been some successes. And so if you have not looked lately, you should look at vaccine coverage in the state of North Carolina, where we live, because despite early disparities, vaccination coverage among African Americans and among Hispanics is as high as it is among whites. I think that is a testament to the work of the health departments in the state to improve access in those populations, but also to address myths and misinformation that have run rampant. Now, vaccination rates among Native Americans are much lower. And so I think there is still room to go. But it points out to me that now's not the time to throw our hands up and say that these problems are insurmountable. Now's the time to roll up our sleeves and start addressing them in real ways that are sustainable. One of my mentors said to me that if you want to make big changes in the world, you have to work on the hardest problems. This is the hardest problem. And I think we need to call it out. We need to hold ourselves accountable for it. And we need to keep an eye on it and keep it visible so that it doesn't disappear from view again.
And in terms of the local response, this is what Ms. Farrington had to say about what is being done in North Carolina to help support these vulnerable populations.
So what we saw during the pandemic was that COVID cases, hospitalizations, and deaths that we saw during surges were prefaced by historical and structural racism that drove pre-existing social vulnerability and an increasingly likelihood of negative outcomes for populations that have been historically marginalized. And we know that the pandemic didn't create those inequities, but it certainly illuminated the fault lines of inequality. We saw that Native Americans, African Americans, and Latino Americans had higher COVID case rates, and in some cases, as much as 2.5 times higher death rates. So what are we being doing to support these populations? We want to make sure that going forward, we leverage the lessons learned from the pandemic to recover stronger. We've grounded our work in whole person care, whole person health. We want to make sure that that work is driven by equity and that it is responsive to the needs of our community and responsive to the successes that we have achieved in the past. And so you may be familiar with a number of campaigns that we've launched. Many of them, like the Know Before You Go campaign, have focused on making sure that everyone gets vaccinated because we have documented and proven that vaccinations are one of our major tools to protect people from pandemic like the COVID pandemic. We continue to remain vigilant in our responses to new public health threats, just such as the monkeypox public health threat that we recently encountered and the flu as well, so that we want to remain responsive and vigilant so that we can quickly put public health measures in place that ensures that people get the right treatment and they get the right information so that they can be healthy and we can reduce the spread and protect our community. And finally, I'd just like to add that we saw during the pandemic that it was important for people to get information from individuals that they trusted. We also learned that there was a certain amount of mistrust that was evident in our community because of historic medical traumas in the past. And so we have emphasized the need to build strong, trusted partnerships with key community stakeholders. We leverage those partnerships to disseminate information, to help us co-design solutions, and to make sure that we can use those trusted relationships to get information out to our community partners. And then the last thing I will say in terms of what we're also doing around the partnership area is making sure that we're focusing on things that are important to people. And one of the things we learned during the pandemic was that COVID took an extreme toll on people's mental and behavioral health. And so we prioritize addressing behavioral health and resiliency. We are offering more services further upstream to build resiliency and to invest in coordinated systems of care that make mental health services easier to access. We're also going to focus on taking care of our children, our most vulnerable members of our community, and also working on a strong and inclusive workforce.
To bring it back full circle, now that you're here at Gillings, you have an important role in shaping future leaders in public health. And it is the number one public school of public health in the United States, as we like to say. And it's in a state that's increasingly diverse, and it's in a state where there is increasing disparities in some of our vulnerable populations, as we just mentioned. How do you plan to apply your experiences in the academic setting, kind of at the national level, like you just talked about, to achieve health equity and build community resilience? I know that we're a little bit early on in your tenure, but just some general ideas.
I'm happy to talk about that. I would start by saying that it's really important and it's got to be a central theme of our work. And it's not a single answer. It's a series of conscious choices we make in how we approach our work at Gillings. It needs to be central in our educational efforts and also in the practical experience that we make available to our students so that they can actually see these inequities in the real world and understand what it's going to take to surmount them. I think it's central to our research. Not every single research at Gillings, but certainly it is health inequities and disparities are core to much of the research that we do. And finally, the third piece of that three-legged stool is our practice work. And by that, I mean the work that we do in the practice of public health, how we support North Carolina, how we support the country, and how we support the world in our global mission, figuring out how to do the best that we can for the healthcare workers in the state and for the population in the state is a key piece of what I'll be thinking about and talking about. It is great to be the number one public school of public health. I want to live in a community that is also at the top of public health, and we're going to be working to try to achieve that.
On a final note, we recently spent a class session discussing the importance of cross-sector partnerships in tackling disasters such as the COVID-19 pandemic. Do you have any words of wisdom for current and aspiring healthcare professionals? How should we, doctors, nurses, public health professionals, everyone, collaborate with each other to meet future disasters with greater resilience and facilitate better outcomes?
Well, I would probably repeat the question back and say, do that. But I think it's a really important point. And there's some military analogy about the fact that you don't want to meet your comrades in the heat of war. And I think it's the same thing here. Relationships are important. This place has low stone walls for a reason. We need to be collaborating now. And that's both collaborating on projects, but also, frankly, building the relationship and the rapport so that in the event of an event, we can fall back on that. And it's not just, I think, in the health sector. There are important roles that we can play by partnering with those in journalism and the media. Certainly this year has highlighted some of the need to really partner with the folks in the School of Government or the law school. And so I really think building that connectivity and building those relationships and building that sense of team ahead of time by looking at public health from all these different angles is what it will take to build that resiliency in our community.
And this is Ms. Farrington's thoughts on how all healthcare professionals can come together to nurture greater resilience in the future.
So I have a lot of ideas and ways that I think that as professionals we can collaborate to be responsive to future disasters and make sure that we can be more resilient and get better outcomes. One of the things that I would start with is saying as professionals, in our collaboration, I think it's important to also prioritize collaboration of people who are in the community. I think valuing both community expertise and technical expertise is important. And so I would ask professionals to ask themselves, you know, what existing partnerships do you have, not just among yourselves, but within organizations that are in community, particularly those organizations that are serving people who are experiencing inequities. And then I think to take the next step, as professionals that you collaborate, about how you can develop and implement specific plans to include those populations to make sure that people who are experiencing inequities have a seat at the table. I think that all of that is about opening up our circles and making sure that we're building relationships broadly, that we're building relationships early. I think the other thing I would say is developing common language. Although we're all working in the same field of health or public health, having language that you are aligned on and agree, what do we mean by health inequity? And who are the populations that we believe are experiencing inequities. I think agreeing on who those people are and what those terms are is incredibly important. And I would also just wrap up by saying we have a lot of tools available to us as professionals. We want to make sure that the tools we're using, the strategies that we're employing, are applied to the populations in ways that they can benefit and use them. There's obviously no one size fits all, no one approach that works for all communities. And I think taking an equitable approach requires us that we modify our interventions to meet the needs of people who we want to benefit from the supports that we have available.
Well, that sounds like a great note to end on. Thank you so much for sharing some of your time and wisdom with us. We are grateful to have you here at UNC and sincerely appreciate everything you have done and everything you'll continue to do for our communities and to build resilience. Thank you.
Thank you. And it was nice to talk to you all. And I really hope that you are going to go out and change the world, because that's, I think, what it's going to take, a generation of people who see these issues as central and are committed to actually trying to be the change they want to see in the world.
After that stimulating discussion, what can we learn from these local and national perspectives? One of our primary takeaways is that there's a lot of work to be done when it comes to resilience and thinking about health equity in times of need, especially in critical times of need, like in natural disasters or pandemic settings. From our national perspective, we obviously know that not enough is being done, but there was a lot of successes to call out in the COVID-19 pandemic that can be built on in the future. From the state perspective, it sounds like it's really important to focus on digital equity and thinking about all of our communities in need and all the diversity that exists across the state to ensure that there are adequate resources where they need to be in disaster. Looking forward to the future, how should the information that we've gained inform our future responses? Rapid deployment of resources to those who are most in need is obviously a critical need, but what does it actually mean from a response perspective? What we found out is that it means having the right people in the right place and diverse perspectives in place to understand communities, to understand community partners, and understand interrelationships within communities, to better know where resources need to be whenever we need them.
So in summary, in the words of Dr. Messonnier, we saw both our best and our worst selves in this pandemic. There were undoubtedly successes in our collective response to an unprecedented pandemic, but there was also a lot of room for growth. And it's important now, after seeing how this pandemic highlighted a number of existing cracks in a variety of the systems in the United States, we need to take notice of these inadequacies and not turn a blind eye in the future.